This is Guitar Talk.
To me, it just seems like there are endless possibilities.
One of the things I like to find out, you know, how people got influenced into playing the guitar, because stories are so unique.
The trick is not to feel pressure to conform.
If you know anything about Joel, he's been around the block. He's probably one of the most sought-after guitar players.
How would you create that song? How would you turn that song into your song?
There's not a guitar player on this planet that I personally don't follow closer. It's not something that you see too often. I only know a few players that do it.
Now, from the home of the blues, Chicago, Illinois, welcome to Guitar Talk with your host, Jimmy Warren.
All right, everybody, Jimmy Warren here. Welcome to Guitar Talk. Thank you so much for tuning in to another Wednesday episode. I don't know where you're listening to it at, but, you know, let me know, man. I don't know, do you follow me on social media? Because if you don't, you really need to. You know, there's Guitar Talk on Facebook, but you can follow me, Jimmy Warren, at Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And then, of course, you know, make sure you're subscribing to GuitarTalkOfficial.com. So much going on. For instance, this episode's brought to you by Charlie and John Strings. Yep, I use them. I was with another string company for 32 years, and I switched. It took an awful lot to make me switch, but they're handmade, hand-wound, all the materials made right here in the U.S. Look, I did 11 gigs, 11. Didn't have to change strings. I mean, they stayed vibrant that whole time. I mean, I'm amazed. I'm actually, you know, I'm still going. I'm going to wait and see how long I can go. All I do is wipe them down at the end. So they're vibrant. They last long. It's charlieandjohns.com. Also, too, make sure you're checking out guitarsforvets.org. Guitars for Vets is an organization that helps veterans with PTSD through the gift of guitar. They're sponsored by Gibson and Yamaha. They have ambassadors such as Sully Ernest, Scott, Ian from Anthrax, Tommy Emmanuel, and of course myself. You want to make sure that you're going to their website at guitarsforvets.org. See how you can help them out. Because our veterans, you know, they suffer from this stuff, man. They do. You know, suicide's a real thing in that world. And if we can, you know, bring some joy, if we can relieve some tension, whatever we can do to make life a little bit better for them, well, then, you know, it's well worth it. So go to guitarsforvets.org and see how you can help them out. Now, there's so much going on at Guitar Talk Official. We're constantly growing. In that, as it sits right now, you know what? We've got a ton of gear demos that are going to be coming your way. The Rowan Music Company has sent us their 3000 series mini pedals. So we got a bunch of them. Delays, cores, loopers, dumblers, etc. We're doing a bunch of demos for them right now. We've got the Plexi Ranger by Carl Martin. We've got the Red Bear by Vex Audio. We've got the Buster Brown by Analog Effects. So much. Yeah, so much going on. So you want to keep an eye out on Guitar Talk Official for the release of those demos. Also, too, we got a brand new video series that's going to be coming to you as well, starting August 29th. It's going to be interviews from the road. That's right. You know what? Bands are back out on tour. You know, they're starting to get around. And so it gives me an opportunity when they come through the Chicago area to go check them out and interview them live from their show. So we're going to launch the first one August 29th, which is a Sunday at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. You're going to be able to get it at guitartalkofficial.com, at Guitar Talk TV, and then, of course, on YouTube. And my first guests are going to be Chuck and Ryan, the guitarist for the rock band Blacktop Mojo. Man, great band, great players, really good guys. You're going to enjoy this. I went to the Forge in Joliet, Illinois, which is a rock club over there where they were playing at. And we just had a good time, man. We talked about guitars and amps and music and all kinds of really cool stuff. And so you're going to enjoy this. So watch out for that. That's called Interviews from the Road. Yeah, right here on Guitar Talk. So today, though, you know what? The interview isn't from the road, but my guest is no stranger to the road for sure. He's been around a long time. He's been playing the blues rock circuit for a very long time. He calls Florida home. He was the guitarist for Hubert Sumlin, who Hubert Sumlin was the guitarist for Howlin' Wolf. He's been on the blues circuit, as I said, for, you know, quite a long time. And he's got a new album out, which is a tribute to Hubert Sumlin. He's got a new label that he's on. So we're going to talk about all that stuff. We had the opportunity to sit down and discuss all those things and a lot more. You're going to enjoy this. So when it's all over with, make sure you go to SeanChambers.com. You grab the album, you find out when he's touring through your area, and then you go. And then when you see him, you say, hey, I heard you on Guitar Talk with Jimmy Warren. Don't sound too bad. All right. So here we go. Without further ado, we got Mr. Sean Chambers right here on Guitar Talk.
Jimmy.
Sean, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, bro. How you doing?
I'm good.
Cool. I'm just figuring out the Zoom thing here. I've done some Skype stuff. I just want to make sure. I actually did one interview via Skype and forgot to turn on the mute was on. I did. So I don't want to waste anybody's time. So
you know what? I did an interview with somebody, and I'm not going to say who it was because if they find out, they might get mad at me.
Right.
And they were late.
Really?
I usually wait, you know, 10, 15 minutes or so, something like that.
Yeah.
And I put the record on pause because normally I start recording all right away.
Right.
And it came on about 5 or 6 minutes later, and I had the record pause the entire 5 minutes that we talked. And so I felt so bad, and I didn't know how to go back and say, you know, I really screwed the pooch here.
Right.
Any way I can get another hour of your time?
And you know, we can redo this one.
No, there was no way to redo it, but you know, yeah. Hopefully they'll forgive me and next time it'll be better. How you been, man?
I've been doing pretty good, you know, just dealing with this whole COVID ordeal, and gigs are starting to slowly trickle back in, and you know, I'm looking forward to 2022. We're going to be doing some playing in 2021, but of course I got a new album coming out, and but 2022, I'm looking forward to, you know, hitting the road again on more of a full-time basis, hopefully.
Yeah. I know it's been a long time since we talked. I think it's been like 6 or 7 years at least.
Has it really?
Yeah, it's been that long. Yeah.
It's been a while. It's been too long then.
Yeah, you look younger. I look older, but that's cool.
I don't know about that. maybe via Zoom, I look younger.
There you go. So you got a lot of really good things going on in your life, and we're going to talk about those things, but I also want to talk about your guitar playing too. So before we jump into the guitar stuff, you signed with a new label. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much. Quarto Valley Records is going to be releasing my new album, which is a tribute to Hubert Sumlin. Yeah. It's called That's What I'm Talking About, and which was a saying that Huber used to say a lot. He'd go, that's what I'm talking about, especially when you did something he liked or, you know, said something he could, you know, relate to or something. Yeah. It was actually recorded in March 2020, right before the pandemic hit, and we flew up to Jersey to do it March 1st, and we were supposed to go to Europe March 9th, and as we were recording the album, the pandemic started really blowing up, especially in the New Jersey, New York area. Yeah. Which is where we recorded. And we recorded the album. We had to cancel our trip to Europe a couple days before we left. And thankfully we did, because we probably wouldn't be able to come back, you know, because they closed everything down shortly after that. And sadly, my good friend and producer who did this album and my last two albums passed away in April, about a month and a half after that session. I still can't really wrap my head around it. He was a great guy, great friend, great guy to work with and work for. Taught me a lot about recording and, you know, working in the studio. Yeah. So the record's kind of been in a limbo for over a year, and then Quarto Valley Records stepped in and now they're taking over the reins. I couldn't be happier. And I know that Ben's really thought highly of Quarto Valley. because Kim Simmons and Savoy Brown actually were in recording their album with Ben just before I recorded mine, and they're with Cordova Valley.
Yeah.
Kim Simmons really thought a lot about Ben because he was like more of an old school guy. He's a guitar guy. He knew how to get your good sounds. And he spoke really highly of Cordova Valley as well, you know, working with Kim Simmons and Savoy Brown and some of the, you know, artists that are on the label there, Cordo.
Yeah. Before that, were you independent?
Before American Showplace, where I did my last couple albums.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize. I thought you did those independently.
No, they were on American Showplace Records, which my last album, Welcome to My Blues, and then the one before that, Trouble and Whiskey. My previous two albums were on American Showplace, which is where I also recorded the new album.
Got it.
And then before that, I was on an independent label called Blue Heat Records. And then going way back, I was on Vestige Records, which is a small independent label, back to my first couple albums.
Yeah. So you haven't been on your own at all?
No, I've never really had my own label or been on my own as far as record label wise. You know, I've booked myself here and there and had some booking agents and then been in between booking agents and stuff like that. But I've always had some kind of label with some kind of distribution. Yeah. I've been lucky in that regard, you know, I think.
Yeah, that's really cool. And so what inspired, I'm going to guess it's the relationship that inspired the album, the tribute to Hubert.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's funny because shortly before I left, I stopped playing with Hubert. I was involved with one of his records. I played on one song. And it was actually done at American Showplace Studios with Ben Elliott. That's the first time I met Ben Elliott, was when I was playing with Hubert. And then things kind of came full circle. And, you know, like 17, 18 years later, I ended up getting signed by Ben and did Trouble and Whiskey, Welcome to My Blues, and then this new album. So Cordova Valley is not only releasing, that's what I'm talking about, the new album. They also bought my back catalog, my last two albums, from Ben's partner in Showplace. So that's the rundown on that.
Cool. So you've had this thing done for a while and you've just been kind of sitting on it. That's got to be hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's got to be really hard. You know, I know so many guys have struggled with that this year. Do I release singles? Do I release the album? I mean, what the hell do I do?
Yeah, well, a lot of time, I mean, the whole premise behind releasing an album is releasing the album and then touring behind it.
Yeah.
So with this whole COVID thing, I mean, people have been releasing albums, which I think is great, but can't really tour behind it. And we're releasing our album July 9th. Actually, the original release date was in June, but it's changed to July 9th now. Okay. Yeah, we're going to be doing some CD release shows in July and August through my home state of Florida. Mm-hmm. And then in September, we're hitting the road for like 2 weeks up through the Midwest, like Kansas, Iowa, Nebraska, you know, Indiana, some places like that.
Yeah, I saw you were going to be at the Red Shed in Hutchinson.
Yeah, never played there before, but I've heard great things about it.
Yeah, I'm there in October.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Great. To go back to answer your question, because I think I got distracted and they didn't answer you. But, you know, Ben Elliott, before we recorded this album, to answer how he came up with the idea of doing the tribute to Hubert, I'd always, you know, it's been almost 20 years since I played with Hubert. It's been quite a while. And I've always wanted to do some kind of tribute, whether it's a song or an album or something for Hubert. And I've just, you know, timing plays a big role in a lot of how that stuff comes about. And so Ben said, it's time to do another album. We need, you know, what have you got written? I said, well, I've got a bunch of bits and pieces written, but nothing really complete. And we were talking about, you know, concepts and ideas for the album. And I said, you know, I've always wanted to do a tribute to Hubert, which again is the way me and Ben and I originally met. And Ben said, that's perfect. Let's do a tribute album to Hubert.
Yeah.
And I said, man, that'd be great. So there's actually, you know, 10 songs that were done by Hubert and Wolf that I played when I was with Hubert. And then one original song I wrote called Hubert Song. And that's kind of like a dedication to Hubert from me on the album.
That's really cool. I got the pleasure of meeting Hubert one time. you know, and he was, you know what, I always find it fascinating when you can meet a piece of musical history.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things I loved about the old days of starting out in Chicago, because back then there were so many of them around.
Right.
You know, and if you were in the circle, you got to, at some point in time, you were on stage with them, you know, if
yeah.
you play. And I think it's really cool, you know, to turn around and do a tribute to him like that, because.
Well, thank you. You know, it's something I just, you know, it comes from my heart, and it's something that, you know, I did with him in mind, and you know, I hope he would be proud.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure he would. I'm sure he would. So cool. So this year is just going to be some scattered dates, and you're not going to get too excited about it, but you're really putting all your eggs in the 2022 basket.
You know, I'm excited about playing again. I mean, actually, you can see my finger. I started playing the other day and busted a callus open because my calluses on my finger are so soft. Fingers. So getting my fingers toughened back up, and I'm excited to get out there and play again, even though, like you said, there's scattered dates.
Yeah.
I'm just expecting for 2022 to be more of on a full-time basis again, but
yeah,
you know, I'm just looking forward to get out there and playing and getting back out on the road, seeing some friends, seeing some fans, and playing some music, you know?
Yeah, I think it's going to be later this year and into early next year where you're going to start to see everything kind of fall. Because right now, I mean, all the guys that I talk to in Europe, everything's shut down.
Yeah, I know. We're supposed to be in Europe in October, and that's still kind of up in the air. So, I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen or not.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's been so many bands that have booked their tours and canceled and booked and canceled. They're finally to the place to where we're just going to let it go and see what happens. And that's just, what have you been doing? Your calluses are soft. You would think that you have nothing but time to play.
Right.
You know what I mean? So what have you been doing? Yeah. I mean, coloring books, cartoons.
Yeah. I like coloring books. Yeah. No, actually, you know, since the COVID thing, I took on a part-time day gig, at a big RV dealership here in Fort Myers.
Yeah.
And I'm moving buses around on the property, moving them in and out of the service bays and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I play, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Bruce Katz, who played keyboards, on the album, as well as John Ginty played, sat in and played a couple as well, on the Hammond B3. But I was talking to Bruce, and he said, you know, everybody's asking me, you know, you must have a ton of songs written, you know, 'cause you've been around sitting around doing nothing for 15 months or 14 months. And he said, actually, no, because it's been so uninspiring.
Yeah.
You know, it hasn't been inspiring to write. And I said, it's been kind of the same with me. I haven't, you know, I've been working my part-time day gig. I'll come home and play some guitar and stuff. But to be honest, I haven't done a whole lot of writing. I've got some tidbits put together, you know, but by no means do I have like a whole catalog written that I've done since the whole COVID time.
Yeah. I figured some of you guys, you know, would go into this, you know, the artist that you are, and come out, you know, like guitar virtuosos, you know? like Sean Marty Friedman / Chambers, you know, kind
of. right,
you know, because, you know, I don't know, but I know for me, man, I have spent so much time playing guitar.
That's great.
Over this time, I mean, I've absolutely loved it, you know. I hate to say that the downtime has been a good time, you know, to some degree, but
that's good to hear, man. I guess it's been a different experience for everybody, you know.
Little
things like the calluses when you're playing all the time, just the calluses on your fingers, you take for granted, you know. And then the other night, because we're getting ready to do a video here in a couple of weeks for a single off the new album, and so I was really woodshedding and getting my stuff back together, like playing 3 or 4 hours a night, and split my finger open one of these soft calluses, so now it's healing up. Going, man, now I'm kind of like, wow, because that's never really happened, you know. Take little things like that for granted,
Man, I've had you know, where the fingers start to bleed and stuff. I don't know about you, I carry super glue in my case.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
I tried putting a little super glue on it, and I slid down, and the string went right up under the super glue and just ripped it right off. So, you know, I tried the little tips, they have these Gorilla little rubber fingertips you can put on.
Yeah.
And those just, I mean, I guess they're more for acoustic guitar players that have sore calluses.
Yeah.
You know, but if you try to do any kind of soloing or anything, they just start coming off.
It
doesn't work for me. So I just have to kind of ease back into it, you know?
Well, every time I've seen you, you've had a Strat in your hand pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, that seems to be your go-to guitar. I mean,
it is.
Yeah. Why is that?
I don't know. It's just the Strat just feels good in my hands. I like the way it sounds. Yeah. I guess it's kind of like a race car. I mean, you can drive any car out there, but everybody has their preference of their own car. It's funny because some of my favorite players, like Gary Moore and Billy Gibbons, and the list goes on and on, you know, Freddie King. I mean, a lot of guys that I listen to play Gibsons, you know, Les Pauls. Yeah. A lot of my favorite guys play Strats as well, but I've had Gibson Les Pauls, you know, but I always just end up reverting back to the Strat. You know, I just the feel, the sound, and that's about the only way I can explain it. I love Gibsons. You know, they're a little bit heavy. A little bit top heavy, but other than that, I don't know. I've just always gravitated towards the Stratocaster.
Yeah. Now, are your Strats, are they stock, or are there things that you do to your guitar? Doesn't matter which guitar it is. Like if you went out and bought a Strat, you would automatically do this to it. Is it like that? Are they all different? Are they all configured the same? And are they stock or not?
Well, I have a Strat. It's actually a Mexican Strat that I bought in about 1991 that I played with Hubert a lot, and I still have that. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I did differently in that is I changed the bridge pickup mm-hmm. to a DiMarzio hot rail just so I can go on my low selector switch and get more of a hot tone.
Yeah.
That one's pretty much stock. Usually if I haven't bought a guitar from the music store in years, but usually I would buy something that I like the sound of already. Now I have the white Strat that I use pretty much primarily all the time was given to me by a good friend of mine who passed away years ago. And I wasn't crazy about the sound of it. You know, it sat in my room for a couple years and it had stock pickups in it. Mm-hmm. And my old manager, his name is Steve Einzig out of New York, sent me a pair of Lindy Fralin pickups. And so one day I was bored and I was sitting around and I said, man, let me stick these Lindy Fralin pickups in the Strat. And that made it really come to life, you know? Mm-hmm. And so ever since then, the last 11, 12 years, I've been playing this. It's actually a Japanese Strat. And I've had plenty of American Strats. And, you know, you know, every piece of wood's different. You could get a Japanese Strat that sounds like crap. American Strat sounds great, or vice versa. But this Japanese Strat I have, once I put the Lindy Fralin pickups in it, man, it made it come to life. And that's the only thing I really did different to it, because I just changed the pickups.
Yeah, those are great pickups.
Yeah, I like them a lot.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? People get hung up on the American versus made in Mexico versus Japanese, you know, and I don't know about you, even though I love the Japanese made Strats, I think that they're really high quality guitars. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, out of the, you know, 70 some guitars I got, I can't even tell you. I think I probably got maybe 10 or 11 Mexican Strats.
Do you? Yeah, I love Mexican Strats.
I don't know about you. For me, it's like I look at the body and the neck. If I love the way that it feels on me and I like the neck on the guitar, I'll buy it, you know, or if I'm looking for a guitar,
right?
Because I'm going to gut it anyway. You know, I don't have any of them that, you know, are stock like that. But
right.
But the quality of the guitar, I mean, within itself is, I mean,
yeah. Do they have a lot of the Mexican Strats you have? Do they have rosewood necks on them or maple?
I don't have any maple.
No maple. Yeah, me neither. I have a rosewood neck on my Mexican Strat, which I've had since literally like more than half my life. And but the one that I still play, the one I play has a maple neck on it.
Yeah.
But it still sounds great. I play both. I just tend to play the white Strat more. Primarily, yeah. You know, yeah. But that's one thing I noticed is the Mexican Strats usually have the rosewood necks on them.
Yeah. Yeah. All the Strats that I have, every one of them have, even all my Tellies, I got 14 Tellies and they all have rosewood.
You got a lot of guitars.
Couple.
That's great. That's great.
But I just recently purchased, well, within the last year or so, an Ibanez Prestige. Man, what an amazing guitar.
Really?
I mean, I absolutely love it. I've been a Strat guy my entire life, even though if I was stranded on a desert island, I'd own a Tele, you know, because I just feel the Tele's just a great all-around guitar.
Oh, man, yeah, very versatile.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the Prestige is really nice, and it was the first guitar I ever bought. It's got a roasted maple neck. It's the only guitar I ever got that had, you know, maple.
Mm-hmm.
That. But it
nice.
plays great, man.
It's nice, great. I bet.
Yeah. So, okay, so you're not a closet Godin fan, or you got a Parker in the mix?
No, not really. I don't really have a ton of gear. I've got, you know, maybe about five or six guitars, maybe seven. And, you know, speaking of off-brand stuff, that's, you know, a lot of guys play Fender amps and stuff. I actually use a Mahalo amp, and I run it in stereo with a Krait V50.
Really?
Yeah, and a lot of people say Krait because that's, you know, but man, I'll tell you, those two together in stereo sound great.
Do they?
And every once in a while, I'll have a 15-inch extension cabinet I'll run with them. And
So how are you running them both identical? I mean, or do you use one more for a clean channel and one more for the drive section, or are they both on all the time?
They're both on all the time. I run one a little cleaner, one a little dirtier. And then I just have a stereo chorus pedal where you can plug in each amp to the left side, and then you have one out coming out for your guitar. Yeah. But I don't AB them and like switch back and forth between the amps. They're just on all the time. And like I said, one's a little cleaner, one's a little dirtier.
Yeah. That's a nice setup though. I like to run it. But you just said that you just got a chorus pedal. So you're not a pedals guy, huh? You don't have this great big giant monster.
No, I actually use two chorus pedals. I use one so I can run my two amps, and I just got a little bit of chorus. I mean, you probably couldn't even hardly tell. Just a little bit of chorus just to fatten it up just a little bit through the stereo chorus pedal.
Yeah.
And then I have an old Boss chorus pedal that just has rate and level.
Yeah.
And Chris Duarte actually taught me this trick. If you turn the rate to like 2 o'clock and the level all the way up, it kind of simulates a guitar Leslie.
Yeah.
So for certain stuff, I'll use that to simulate the guitar Leslie just off and on here and there. So those are the two chorus pedals. And then I have an OCD overdrive and a Vox wah pedal. That's my setup.
Yeah. Well, those are all great. I love the Vox wah, of course, and the OCD you can't go wrong with.
Yeah. I think the Vox wah is a little fatter and has a little more mid range and a low end than the Crybaby, you know,
wah,
which is a really popular one too.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff on the market nowadays though. I've always been the kind of guy that once I find something that works for me, I use it for like a decade. You know what I mean? I've never really, you know, been a gearhead and had like 20 amps sitting around and, you know, 100 pedals. I usually find something that I'm comfortable with that I like. And then I just go with it for quite a while until something breaks.
Yeah.
You know, and I got to change something out.
So have you fooled around with any of the digital gear? Like a
Fractal
or Kemper or anything like that?
No, I really haven't, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I've messed around, you know, in the studio and at some friends' houses and stuff that have that stuff, but never a lot in a live situation or any, even in a studio situation. I'm always running amps mic'd up.
Yeah. So you didn't use any plugins or anything like that, you know, for amps? Yeah.
Nope.
That's cool. Just turn that. Now, do you use an attenuator?
I don't use an attenuator. No, when I did my last album, Ben Elliott, who was a guitar freak. I mean, he was a guitar guy. If you play guitar, you would want him to record you. He actually had 9 amps set up for me, in the guitar room when I got to New Jersey on March 1st, 2020, all running together. And he would run a few of them at a time for certain songs, you know, and try to find that one tone and that one sound running maybe like the Marshall with the Fender. Or, you know, a Fender with the Mahalo or, you know, pairing them up somehow. But I got pictures of it. There'll probably be a couple pictures in the liners of the album. But it was literally a room with 9 amps. I mean, it was just It was quite a sight. Beautiful.
That's really cool. Well, I can't wait to hear the album, because I've liked all the other work that you've done. You know,
I think you're
really talented, man.
Thank you so much, man. Likewise too. I like your stuff as well.
Well, I appreciate that.
So I guess I
need to know, because I've never found this out. Are you somebody that's trained in music? Did you take lessons and theory and anything like that, or are you completely 100% self-taught?
I'm self-taught. When I convinced my parents to get me a guitar when I was about 11 years old. I got my first guitar, and they bought me 4 lessons. And they said, the thing is, if we buy you the guitar and the lessons, you have to stick with the lessons, and you can't quit and give it up. You got to stick with it, and you got to practice 30 minutes a night. I was about 11 years old. I went to my first lesson. They're teaching me, you know, the proper way to hold the guitar, and, you know, which wasn't comfortable for me, you know. Yeah. And they're teaching me, you know, Mary Rode Her Boat Ashore and stuff like that. And I was like, that's not what I want to play, you know. So my mom, you know, I had, you know, sheet music back a long time ago when I was a kid that I was supposed to practice every night. Of course, I never read music, but I was starting to, they were trying to teach me. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. And my mom would knock on the door and say, I don't hear any music coming out of that room. You better be practicing, you know. So I would just sit there and noodle around just to make some noise and do whatever I wanted. I wasn't going by my lesson that I was supposed to be practicing.
Yeah.
And then finally something clicked and I started to learn how to play by ear, you know. Mm-hmm. And then after that, they couldn't shut me up, you know.
As the years have passed, though, have you ever thought about, well, Or have you ever taken lessons from anybody? You know, because I know a lot of guys, like myself included, mm-hmm. you know, every now and then, you know, I'll find somebody, you know, and I'll take some lessons for them. That was one of the good things about, the pandemic. There was a lot of people, a lot of really good people you could take lessons from.
Yeah.
People that are normally are out on the road are now giving lessons.
Yeah, I've never, be honest with you, I've never taken any lessons. Just when I was a kid and got my first guitar, my parents signed me up for a month's worth of lessons. Yeah. It was like, I think 30 minutes or an hour a day, you know, once a week. And by the time those lessons were over, I'd started to pick up how to play by ear. And then I never went to the lessons. I just started, what I would do is back then I'd have a tape deck.
Yeah.
I'd want to learn a song. So I would listen to, you know, a little part of it, stop it, try to figure it out, rewind, play it again, try to figure it out. And I just taught myself how to play by ear. I never really took any lessons from anybody.
Yeah, yeah. It's really cool. So what would you say, though, are some of the things that you did in the early days as a player that have helped make you the player that you are today?
I think, you know, playing live mm-hmm. and just getting out there. And, you know, I was always a really shy kid growing up. And music kind of helped me break some of my shyness. I mean, sometimes I still get a little anxious and nervous before a show. And it seems like it's the smaller shows. If we're playing a big festival, I'm fine, you know, but a little teeny club that's packed full of people or maybe has however many people in it, whatever, you know, sometimes I'm more nervous for a show like that. But once you start playing, your nerves kind of go away. But I think for me, facing my fear and just getting up on the stage and playing live throughout the years, you know, over the past couple decades have helped me to become a better player and break out of my shyness a little bit, you know, and, you know, of course, recording, I've learned a lot, you know, recording albums in the studio. Every time I do an album, I learn something, you know, new about the guitar or recording or something. So,
yeah. So do you plan on, I know this album hasn't released in that, do you plan on putting out another album in 2022?
I believe, and don't quote me, but I think that what we might do after this album is put out like a compilation of stuff from all my 8 albums. And that's been in the talks for like the next project.
Yeah.
And then possibly after that, I'll probably put out another studio album. Yeah. So it'll probably be another good year and a half before I, you know, probably back in the studio recording.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. Don't quote me. But I mean, that's kind of in the direction that we've been talking about going.
Right. Well, you never know, you know, if things don't, you know, get back to normal, you know, quick, who knows? You know, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. You never really know. You know, they say life happens while you're making plans. So, you know what I mean? Which is kind of true.
That's exactly the truth, man. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Sean, I appreciate you taking, you know, this time, man, to chat with me. And the new album is That's What I'm Talking About, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
To Huber Sumlin.
Yeah, and I appreciate you having me, man, Jimmy. And it's been too long since we've spoke. Yeah. And congratulations on the success of your podcast, man. It's great.
Yeah, it's going pretty good.
Yeah. That's remarkable, man. Keep it up. Keep up the good work, because we need more people like, you know, guys like you that are spreading the word and turning people onto the music. You know, you're doing a great thing. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I appreciate it. I wish you all the success with the album, Sean. And when you're in the Chicago region, let me know so I can come out and.
Absolutely. Come out and play a couple.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, man, definitely. You know it.
All right, man. Take care of yourself, okay?
Take care, bud. All right, Jimmy. Thank you.
Yep, bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, there you go. Sean Chambers, hell of a nice guy, great player. You want to make sure that you're going to seanchambers.com, pick up his new album, follow what he's doing, sign up for his mailing list, do whatever you got to do, you know, to help him out. Support live music. You know, guys like that, man, they need people like you and I to buy their CDs and come see their shows. You know what I mean? That's the difference between being the Rolling Stones and being Sean Chambers or Jimmy Warren. We need people. They don't. Right? No, that's not true. Well, they need people too. Right? Mick Jagger needs some love as well, I guess. All right, so next week, man, you are in for a treat. You know, we've had all kinds of people on the show when it comes to the guitar. And this guy that's going to be here next week, Steve Stein, you might know him as the long-haired rock and roller on YouTube for Guitar Zoom, that's teaching everybody how to play riffs and, you know, play solos when they've never played guitar, and, you know, master classes. And, man, he was on YouTube giving lessons and tutorials and things of that nature before anybody else in that. And so Steve Stein is, man, he is a whiz on guitar. I mean, an absolute whiz. The guy is a masterful player. He knows music inside and out. And I mean, there's nothing the guy can't do. But at the core of all of that, what makes it really, you know, really exceptional is the fact that he's a hell of a nice guy. You're really going to like him. So next week, join me when Steve Stein from Guitar Zoom is going to be right here on Guitar Talk. We want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Make sure you're sticking with us at guitartalkofficial.com. Until next week with my guest Steve Stein, I'm Jimmy Warren. Stay safe, y'all.